What I want to do is go through a basic process of how a bill becomes law in North Carolina, how do you approach legislators, and what that process is. And this is kind of the motto, the power of the people is stronger than the people in power. You know, we look at the people who are in power right now, and you might say to yourself, oh, it's not worth it, right? Well, it is worth it. Why lobby for a piece of legislation if you don't think your effort stands a chance of succeeding given the current political atmosphere? Well, because lobbying for legislation is an educational process for legislators, media, the public, and for yourself. It builds, it's a building process. It's not going to happen instantly. You have to reconcile that. You're not going to go in there and get a bill passed the next day. It's a building process. You have to educate legislators. You have to educate the public. You have to educate the news media. It provides a vehicle for public involvement. So in other words, if you get a bill introduced, if you just find a friendly legislator and get a bill introduced, for instance, we actually have two pieces of legislation that are pending in the North Carolina General Assembly right now. One is called the Efficient and Affordable Energy Rates Bill that would create an inverted rate structure in North Carolina to promote investment in energy efficiency and solar energy. I'm not going to go too deeply into that unless you want me to. And the other one is called the We the People Act. We're part of this grand coalition of about 30 groups that are trying to get the money out of politics. And so we want a referendum to allow the people to tell Congress, the people of North Carolina, to tell Congress that we want a constitutional amendment that says corporations are not people, money is not speech, and we want to reverse the Citizens United decision and previous court decisions that have led to corporate personhood and allowed all that flood of money in politics. So we find friendly legislators in the House and the Senate to introduce the bill, and we found 17 who were interested in introducing that bill, and they did. So that becomes a vehicle for public involvement. You know, it's one thing to tell people, well, we really got to get the money out of politics. Well, okay, how, you know? Well, there's House Bill 453 and Senate Bill 354 that are going to give us, enable us to vote on the issue. That's how. So that's something that people can support. It's a vehicle that people can hop onto and work for. It gets beyond slogans to the nitty-gritty policies and mechanics of how solutions will be implemented. It forces you to think about the mechanics of how it could get done. Okay, we all know we would like to see solar energy on everybody's roof, right? Well, how do we get there? You know, it's one thing to promote that and say, yeah, I'm really in favor of that, but okay, if you were the legislator, what law or set of laws would you pass to help that to happen? And so it really forces you to think through the mechanics of that process. And it forces you to work together with other people who may know more than you about certain aspects of the issues. And it forms groups and power cells, really. And so that is an important reason to do it, even if you don't think it stands a chance to pass in this legislative session. Lobbying promotes change, bringing new ideas into the realm of public and legislative discourse. You know, legislators deal with 1,000 issues every legislative session, but more than half, probably most of them, I'd say 90% of them, aren't even on the radar for most legislators because they don't get any public feedback about it. If they suddenly get 100 letters on one particular topic, that puts it on their radar. And they need to learn more about it. They understand that they have to learn more about it because they depend, legislators depend on votes to get reelected. And so they want to know what it is that the public mind is thinking. And if they start hearing about certain subjects, that piques their interest. And so it's important to put it on their radar, and that's why it's important to introduce legislation, even if it doesn't stand a chance to get to pass in this legislative session. And you're building. So We got 17 legislators, and they're all Democrats, to co-sponsor this We the People Act. Well, when the pendulum swings, and in the next session, maybe, different leadership takes over, we already have a core of support. We don't have to start from scratch. And let me tell you, there is a very small window of opportunity to get a piece of legislation passed in any given legislative session. So you have to have that core of support so that you're not starting from scratch, you know. And so it's important to do that now. And that's what we've done. We've gained this core of support. And this is one of my favorite quotes from Martin Luther King Jr. We're not thermometers here to measure the temperature. We are thermostats here to change the temperature. You know, and so often I'll run across people who give me this line. There's no sense in working in the General Assembly this year because of what the political atmosphere there is now. Well, go and change the political atmosphere. That's what we're here to do. We're not here just to measure it and see what we can do now. We're here to change it so that we can get done what needs to get done. And this is an important thing that most people probably don't know. This is Article 1, Section 2 of the North Carolina State Constitution. Read that Section 2. All the political power is vested in and derived from the people. All government of right originates from the people, is founded upon their will only, and is instituted solely for the good of the whole. Wow. That's pretty powerful stuff there. And I think that most legislators don't understand that. Most people don't understand that. And so it's our job to remind legislators about that. And I do. Every time I go into Raleigh, I quote that, you know, when I get people trying to dismiss me or whatever, you know. And that's just a very powerful statement. And it's one that can be enforced if enough people stand up and voice their concerns. So this is a map of the North Carolina state government. Three branches: legislative, executive, judicial. I'm not going to go into the specifics of this right now because this is generally a two-hour presentation. We're cutting it down to a one-hour presentation, and half of it's already gone. So, but I will say that what's happening right now is that the legislative branch is attempting to usurp both the executive and the judicial branches of government. They are trying to move some of these cabinet posts and appointees over to the legislative side, and they're trying to redistrict gerrymandering the judicial districts so that there'll be more Republican judges on the Supreme Court and Court of Appeals. So, so that's the generally it. But I do want to point out a hierarchy that exists in the legislative branch. You'll see the Speaker of the House and the President pro tempore. They preside over the House and the Senate, respectively. And they are all powerful in North Carolina. North Carolina has the weakest constitutional powers for governor of any state. In fact, up until 1996, the governor didn't even have a veto power in North Carolina. And that's really undemocratic for the people of North Carolina because the governor is one of the few elected officials that gets elected by the entire population. You can't gerrymander the governor's race, okay? But you can gerrymander judicial races and legislative races. So when they try to take power away from the governor, that's really undemocratic, and it takes the voice of the people away, essentially. But they're very powerful because they dictate over what committees exist, who heads the committees, what bills get sent to what committees. And so if the Speaker or the President pro tempore doesn't like a piece of legislation, it's not going to go anywhere in general. It's very difficult to overcome the power of the Speaker and the President pro tempore. Okay. So here it is enlarged. This is the order of the hierarchy. This is the way it's listed in on the web page of the General Assembly. In actuality, the committee chairs should be, in my opinion, higher, maybe just under the majority leader in each house. Because the committee chairs are very, very powerful as well. If a bill, they sort of have, it, within their committee, they have the same power that the Speaker and the President pro tempore does. If they don't like a bill, they table it, and it most likely will never again see the light of day. And conversely, if they like a bill, they can push it through the process very quickly. Okay. And these are the various standing committees in the House, listed in alphabetical order, not necessarily in order of importance. And I'm going to move on to, these are the standing committees in the Senate. And standing committees means that these are the same committees there year after year after year, session after session after session. Sometimes there are special committees that are appointed separate from this. And this is the basic path that legislation takes. So you find bill sponsor, and co-sponsors can sign after a bill is submitted. Then co-sponsors have 24 hours to sign on in North Carolina. Now, that's a lot different from the way it is in the federal government, where co-sponsors can sign on at any time, basically. But here, you only have 24 hours to notify other legislators who you think might be willing to be co-sponsors and get them to willingly sign on to the bill. So it's not an easy process. And from there, after the bill is filed and gets co-sponsors, it goes to the House Speaker or the President pro tempore, depending on which house it originates in. And they then assign the bill to a committee of their choice. And usually you can tell, now they have to assign it to some committee. And you can tell by which committee they assign it to how serious they are in support of the bill or not. For instance, if you have something that has to do with solar energy, okay, and they send the bill to the Rules Committee in the House, then you know that they're trying to kill the bill, because it should go to public utilities or environment or commerce or something like that. I mean, if that would be the more logical route for the bill to go if they're serious. And usually they'll assign a path to a bill, because many bills have to go through more than one committee. It might have to go through public utilities and then to commerce and then to finance, and then after it goes through all the committees, the committee chair, it goes to a committee, the committee chair holds a hearing if he wants to, or he tables it if he doesn't. If it's not tabled, the bill is amended by the committee members. They call this a sausage factory, you know, because by the time it gets through, very often a bill will not be recognizable by the time it gets to the floor of the House or the Senate. And so from the committees, if it gets through that process, then it goes back to the floor of the House or the Senate, the way the bill is debated, amended again, and a vote is taken, and if it passes in both houses, it goes to a joint committee for reconciliation, because now, remember, you've got two bills going through two different sausage processes coming to, and they pass, suppose they both pass, one in the House, one in the Senate, and so they're going to have differences most likely by the time they get passed. But they both get passed, and then they go to a joint committee. Let me use this. Okay, they go to this joint committee of the House and Senate, and there's generally like 30, 15 House members, 15 Senate members, or something like that, that form a joint committee that handles all of the legislation that, that gets passed in both of both houses in that session, okay? And so they hammer out common language, and then after they do that, it gets sent back to the House and back to the Senate, where it gets discussed and debated and amended again, gets sent back to the Joint Committee, and then they find common language again, send it, and this could go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, or not. I mean, it just depends. And then eventually, both houses have to pass the same bill with exactly the same language, every period, every comma, every quotation mark. You know, everything has to be identical. And if that happens, then it goes to the governor's bill, governor's desk for his signature, and the governor can either sign it or veto it. If he vetoes it, then it goes back to both houses, where a three-fifths majority in each house can override the veto, and then it becomes law. Now, let me explain that this has to happen in a matter of weeks. North Carolina has a two-session system, okay? Am I standing in a good place for the camera? Good, okay. North Carolina has a two-session system. There's a long session and a short session. Every 2 years, the entire General Assembly is re-elected. Every senator and every House member has to stand for re-election. Every 2 years, okay? And in that two-year session is first a long session and a short session. The long session, they debate and deal with all types of legislation, resolutions, having to do with social issues, economic issues, environmental issues. In the short session, the only legislation they're supposed to deal with is budgetary matters and legislation that has passed in either one house or the other during the long session. So they basically are taking care of unfinished business in the short session. And in the long session is when the real debate happens and the real work is supposed to happen. But look at these deadlines. So the House, by Wednesday, March 15th, all bills have to be submitted, have to be filed, okay, or drafted, excuse me. There is a bill drafting committee that consists of a group of lawyers, a group of attorneys. And so you want a bill passed, you take your idea to the legislators you want to sponsor it, they send it to bill drafting where they turn it into legalese, they turn it into bill format. All the lines are numbered and whatever, you know, they refer to different pieces of legislation that exist already that may be changed by your legislation. It's a whole process these attorneys go through to draft a bill. So that has to be done by March 15th. Now, the session starts January 31st, okay? So we're talking about 45 days in which we're dealing with as many as 1,000 pieces of legislation, okay? So you got to get your bill, find your sponsors, get it sent to drafting, and then have them file the bill. Bills, resolutions, not finance, and bills, okay. It has to be filed by March 29th, April 11th, and April 25th, depending on the type of bill it is. So,
2 weeks.
Do you see the schedule that's here?
Yeah, 2 weeks to turn it into legalese.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just an incredibly tight schedule that happens once every 2 years. That's the short window of opportunity that you have to get a bill passed. Now, why is this so undemocratic? Well, because if you want it to be active like this, you have to travel to Raleigh. You have to get a motel and stay there, or find someplace to stay. And you have to stay there for a period of days to talk to legislators. And good luck talking to legislators, because it's not easy. They have a very busy schedule, so you've got to somehow get in there. Now, Duke Energy, on the other hand, they have a team of lobbyists who live in the legislative building. They're there from dawn to dusk. I mean, as soon as the bell rings, they're there, you know, and they're there throughout the legislative session to make sure that everything goes the way that they want it to go. And everybody knows them. They all go out to coffee with the legislators, you know, and they're buddy-buddy with them. You're coming out of the blue to talk to some legislators who have never heard of you before, probably, you know, and maybe they do. You know, they know me because I've been doing this for a number of years, and so I know who's going to be friendly and who's not. But the odds are all stacked against you as a citizen, okay? And in the short session, it's even worse, because they're going to tell you that, well, we don't deal with that during the short session. It's only, you got to come back during the long session. And to boot, we have what's called a part-time state legislature in North Carolina. This is a vestige of when North Carolina was a rural state, and citizens actually were part-time legislators. You know, they'd go and travel to Raleigh for a very short session and then come back. It was a very aristocratic system, because you had to be able to afford to do that. You had to maintain basically two homes, one in Raleigh and one wherever you live, especially if you live in the extreme western part of the state or the eastern part of the state. So really, I mean, in modern days, we, by all rights, should have a full-time state legislature that gets paid adequately so that anybody can afford to become a legislator. They get paid, I believe it's $13,000 a year right now to be a part-time state legislator. And it's not a part-time job at all anymore. So you either have to be independently wealthy, or you have to be funded by some corporate entity that likes having you there. You know, that's how our system works. So I want to go over the North Carolina General Assembly website, because this is a really rich resource for grassroots activism. It's very comprehensive. You can look up bills from this session and any previous session, going, you know, back as far as you want to go up here. You just type in the bill, or you can use keywords to bring up the subjects that you're looking for. You can see, once you find the bill, you can find out who the sponsors and co-sponsors were of that bill, and you can see the text of the bill. And you can find out anything about any House member, any Senate member. You can find out you can look them up by county or by district, and find out who your legislator is, who the legislator is in some distant county, what committees they're on, who's on a particular committee. And so this is a very good resource to use. And so what I'm going to do here is, suppose I'm looking for somebody to co-sponsor the efficient and affordable energy rates bill. So I'm going to go to the House and see if there's any. What I actually went through this process. We have Democratic co-sponsors. What we really want is Republican co-sponsors, because that makes it a more viable bill if you have a Republican-led state legislature. So, okay, let's try to find some Republicans who may have an environmental bent, and they do exist. So you go to the House and you, that's Tim Moore, he's the Speaker of the House, and you go to House member list and it says room, phone, and email address. Okay, let's go there. And you're gonna see a list of all the state legislators, all the House members listed alphabetically. And there's one down here that, let me go back. Yeah, this is, well, okay. His name is Nelson Dollar, I think his name was. I picked out his name because I just thought that was a perfect name for a state legislator. Nelson Dollar, and okay, here he is. He's Representative Nelson Dollar, and he's a Republican. And it says, it shows up here, introduced bills. Well, we want to learn a little bit about him. Let's see what his history is on environmental legislation. Maybe he's got something in bills he's introduced that'll tell us something. So we go into introduced bills and we look down. These are all the bills that he's introduced. And if you look down here, now this is also in that pamphlet that's on your seat. Where is that? Here it is. It says fracking. Protecting the public. That's a bill that he co-sponsored. Well, that's a good title. That doesn't necessarily mean anything because, you know, sometimes this is sort of an Orwellian age we live in. It can say protecting the public and mean the exact opposite, but let's see what that legislation is. So you can push on that link and it'll bring up that bill. Here it is, Fracking, Protecting the Public, House Bill 172. And what we see here is that, let's see who else sponsored this bill. Well, we've got Nelson Dollar, Adcock Ager, John Ager. He's from Buncombe County. He's a Democrat. He's actually pretty good on environmental issues. Who else is on there? Susan Fisher's on there. Wow, I don't think she put her name on a piece of legislation if it was a bad piece of legislation. Environment. So chances are, and there are several other progressive legislators who are on this list, chances are that's a pretty good bill. So that tells you something about Nelson Dollar, okay? It gives you a lead, and you can go talk to Nelson Dollar, would you be interested in co-sponsoring the bill, you see? And so that's the kind of research you can do on this website. So lobbying state legislators, what does it take to get a bill through the legislative process? So I like to use this analogy to electricity. You know how electricity, amps times volts equals watts, okay? So amps is all the information you have, the need for this legislation, the economic need, the environmental imperative, public health, moral, ethical reasons, whatever your issue is. These are, you know, constitutional reasons, human rights, data, documentation, studies. That's what the amps are, the substance of why we need this bill passed, okay? The volts is the public support, because that's what pushes it through the circuit. And when you have enough, and examples of the volts, the public support, petitions, sign-on letters, local government resolutions. That's a good one, you know, so get your local city council or the Buncombe County Board of Commissioners to sign on to this. That speaks for a lot of people and it's meaningful to legislators.
Polling would be something else, I would think.
Polling. Yeah, if you can afford to run a poll, sure. A credible polls, or you hire Mason Dixon or something like that, you know. That's what you got to do if you're going to do a poll, is hire a professional polling organization, which is not cheap, but it's not that, you know, it runs into several thousand dollars. But it's a good way of showing public support. You're right. Local government resolutions, letters to the editor, newspaper editorials, that's a good one too. You go to your local newspaper, Nashville is a dozen, right? But go to the Citizen Times and explain to them why it's important. And we did this for the Clean Smokestacks Act. We did it all over the state and it was very powerful. We got editorial staffs to back us up and run editorials saying why we needed the Clean Smokestacks Act. And if you can do that, that speaks for a lot of people. It's loud, the legislators are gonna hear about it. People, bodies, demonstrations, emails, phone calls, visits, paid publicity, TV, radio, newspaper ads, if you can afford to do that. That's all the volts. So amps times volts, that's what pushes it through the legislative section. And if you can do that, if you can get it all together, you can overcome Duke Energy's power, and you can overcome that ridiculous, ridiculously restrictive deadline schedule too. You got to prepare in advance, get it all together, and just make it happen all at once. And preparing to approach legislators, call or email to make appointments, dress well. Just because you call and make an appointment doesn't mean you're going to get to see a state legislator. people like you and me, we can just afford to go there for a day or two. We have to go to work. And so you can call in advance, and you need to call in advance, put them on your radar, put you on their radar, and the issue on the radar. You're probably going to speak to a legislative assistant. They'll make an appointment for you to meet with the legislator, but you'll go to their office, and they'll say, oh, well, they just called a committee meeting you've got to go to, or she's got to go to. I'm sorry, they can't. Can we remake an appointment 5 days from now? No, you can't make an appointment 5 days from now. I live in Asheville. But that's how it's going to go. And so you might make 15 appointments for the day, you might make 25 appointments for a couple of days, and you may get to see 5 legislators. But you will be able to speak to legislative assistants and leave written material for them, and again, put it on their radar. And then after you get home, you have to keep on contacting them and put them in touch with each other, make them feel like something is happening, and it will be happening. Know your subject matter. Yeah, don't go in there without knowing what you're talking about. Adapt an attitude of respect and personal integrity. Don't be intimidated, but don't be hostile. It's a balancing act. You should go walk into that building like you own the building. It's your building. That building belongs to the people. And they're your legislators. They have a responsibility to talk to you. But you don't want to come across as hostile, because you'll lose them. You won't gain them. But they like you to be confident, though, and they like you to know what you're talking about. If every time they ask you a question, you should have a piece of paper to back up what you're saying. You should have how many other people are supporting this? Well, we have this petition that was signed by 500 people. Et cetera. Has this been done in other states? Yes, here's 5 other states that have done this. So you have to be prepared in that way. Prepare written materials and packets for legislators. One thing I want to go back for a second and talk about these deadlines. These are their deadlines. They're going to tell you that these are the deadlines. They're their deadlines. They're not our deadlines. So, they don't necessarily adhere to these. These are very arbitrary deadlines. For instance, when they wanted to pass House Bill 2, remember House Bill 2, the bathroom bill that after Charlotte passed a bill that said that transsexuals could use any bathroom they wanted, they called a special session of the General Assembly to overturn. They didn't pay any attention to this deadline. So those deadlines can be overcome with a show of public force. If you have a movement going and you have newspapers printing editorials and you have demonstrations and vigils and press conferences going on, you're putting pressure on them to do something. And so even though they tell you that these are the deadlines, and it's important if you can to stay within these deadlines, but if you don't just say, well, I guess we'll see you in 2 years, that's it. No. The revolution doesn't stop because of these deadlines. You know, you just keep going and you keep applying and building pressure. And it may not get passed in this legislative session. You know, then you work toward the next legislative session. Prepare written materials and packets for legislators. Use a nice-looking folder of some kind. Something that stands out and says that this is important. And have a cover letter, which is a simple something like this, you know. That's about as much writing as should be on the cover letter. Just something that tells them what it's about.
Title page,
right, with maybe a few bullet points underneath of it, you know, and that's the cover letter. And then supporting materials, on the left you might have the amps, on the right you'll have the volts, okay? So you have all the reasons why it's getting passed, and on the right side of the folder you have all the documentation about all the public support it's receiving. Data charts, examples of similar legislation in other states, resolutions, testimonials. That's something we've done in the past. We've enclosed a CD or a flash drive that has more information. If they want to look into it, they can stick it in their computer and watch a PowerPoint presentation about it. That impresses them. Things like that impress legislators. Anticipate the legislator's question, have a document ready to answer each clearly and comprehensively. And this is Mahatma Gandhi, strong, determined, prepared, truthful, and kind. It's said that when Gandhi met with a British occupying official, he always addressed him as my dear friend. He never approached an adversary with hostility, but rather with a smile, and maintained that bearing throughout the conversation. Yet somehow by the time Gandhi departed, the official was made to understand that he was among a small group of armed men surrounded by a sea of millions of Indian people, and it was only by the grace of the Indian people that he was safe from harm. He never said this, but the official understood it by the time he left. And so that's what you're kind of shooting for. Now, we're not all Mahatma Gandhi, and we can't do the job that he did, but that's basically what you're trying to accomplish, is speak from a position of strength and yet maintain kindness and friendliness. That's it.